the Historical Roasting Society, we wanted to do a show about World War II, but we had a hard time picking a guest of honor. Hitler? Not a fan. Churchill? I couldn't afford the bar tab. FDR? Lame. Charles de Gaulle? Not even sure who she is. So I thought, who deserves the last laugh? Who deserves their moment in the sun? So why is tonight different from all other nights? Because tonight, our guest of honor is Anne Frank.
Hello, and welcome to The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast. Last week, we got word that Alec Baldwin will be getting the Comedy Central roast treatment later this summer. So naturally, I wanted to talk about it with the Roastmaster General himself, Jeff Ross. Jeff has been professionally roasting celebrities for more than two decades at this point, taking on everyone from Pamela Anderson and Charlie Sheen to Justin Bieber and Donald Trump, back when he could take a joke, as long as it wasn't about his net worth. On this episode, Jeff gives us a taste of how he will handle Saturday Night Live's Trump stand-in and talks about the origin of his historical roast series on Netflix, in which, among other things, Gilbert Gottfried's Hitler roasts Anne Frank. So here's me and Jeff Ross. This is The Last Laugh. Yeah, I think the last time I saw you was at Clusterfest, and you had some nunchucks that you were walking around with.
There's a lot of fun pictures from that weekend.
Yeah, there are.
From that interview time and right up in that VIP balcony area.
Yeah.
It was a fun time. I'm going back in a couple weeks.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Do you have anything planned for your for Clusterfest, or you're not sure yet what you'll be doing?
I'm gonna do. We're gonna do roast battle.
Oh, nice!
And it's gonna be big in some big arena with big judges.
In the big room,
the
auditorium there.
Well, normally last year I was on the outdoor stage. I did a stand up show.
Yeah.
And that was fun. But this time I'm doing roast battle at midnight.
Oh, wow.
With Neil Brennan and Chris Redd.
Oh, that's fun. And I don't think they've done midnight shows before there
at
the festival.
Roast battle works really well late at night after the fans have seen every other type of comedy.
Yeah.
You just kind of throw it all into the blender.
Everyone's kind of drunk.
And then I'm doing a live read of Clueless.
Who are you playing?
I play the teacher.
The Wallace Shawn character?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And I ran into Amy Heckerling the other day at a party. And I told her she was like perfect for you.
That'll be good. I'm also very happy to have you here this week because they just announced the next roast on Comedy Central is Alec Baldwin.
Crazy.
So, I mean, first of all, what are you possibly going to make fun of Alec Baldwin about this?
You know, I arrived home from the road last night and there were my cousin Ed ordered me four different books about Alec Baldwin.
Oh, really?
One he wrote himself, something else. And a bunch of what I think is cardboard cutouts of Alec Baldwin.
Okay, life size or
yeah. We had a big, tall Bruce Willis last time.
Yeah,
he likes to hang them up so that I can method roast my way into the show.
So, what are you? Are there areas that you're already thinking about with Alec you're interested in exploring?
He's one of my favorite actors, and I've been like an extra in his life for decades.
Really?
He lives in my neighborhood in New York City, and I interviewed him years and years and years ago when I was, I think, a correspondent on The Daily Show. I was doing like entertainment reporting, and I remember him like yelling at a publicist. So I was like, there's always that.
Yeah.
The mood swings.
Yeah.
And, I haven't dived in too much yet.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's a lot there.
Oh, my God.
He's had a long history.
Some of the best movies ever. It's easier, you know, people go, oh, there's so many messed up things about somebody to make fun of. But to me, it's easier to make fun of somebody when they have a million hits.
Yeah.
You know, and he has so many good films
that
it's more fun to watch those than watch bad ones and make fun of those.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get to watch, you know, The Hunt for Red October. And I like ones that people don't even know about, like State and Maine. Did you ever see that one?
That's David Mamet,
right.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Alec's great in that.
Yeah.
Remember, there's like that big car crash scene, and he just gets out of the car and looks at it and goes, well, that happened. So that'll be a fun one.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously the Trump stuff with his Trump impression. Will you be making fun
him?
Of his?
No, I've been trying to figure out who's been doing that. Is that him?
Yeah.
I love how it makes the president crazy.
Yeah.
I have a theory about that. I think it's because, you know, I'm a New Yorker and following this guy for forever. It's because Trump Tower and 30 Rock are essentially side by side. Mm-hmm. If you're looking out the window of Trump Tower,
you can see it.
You're staring at 30 Rock. So 30 Rock, SNL, those are essentially his rowdy neighbors that have been making him crazy. So when he's watching them make fun of him on SNL, he knows they're right across the street.
Yeah, it's kind of insane how angry he gets about that show compared to other presidents who have taken it in a different way.
It's just everyone's a little different. Not roasting's not for everybody, although for a long time he did very well with it.
Yeah. What do you think about Alex's Trump impression? Do you think it goes hard enough on him? He's gotten some criticism, I think, he's kind of just repeats what Trump says sometimes, you know, which is that enough, do you think, or
it's really hard to roast a punchline.
Yeah.
So I don't envy Alec Baldwin having to roast Trump or imitate Trump. I mean, Trump's funny on his own.
Mm-hmm.
So your roast, it's like making fun of a comic's bit.
Yeah.
Trump roasted his way into the Oval Office. Now you're going to try to make fun of him? It's not easy.
Yeah.
I got to give him credit. But someone's got to do it. I'm glad Alec Baldwin does it.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that you had kind of exhausted the roast format at this point until I saw historical roasts recently.
Don't count me out, bro.
I was like, what else could you possibly do with this? And that was a pretty inspired idea, historical roast. So where did that come from?
Well, you know, roasting's my lane. I wanted to expand it into a highway where I can highlight things I care about.
Yeah.
So I can't always wait for Alec Baldwin to say, yeah, roast me. I want to do stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a list of dream roasts.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been doing these historical roasts at the Meltdown here on Sunset. And that eventually closed. And they were like an underground thing. They'd usually have like anywhere from 10 to 30 people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mostly just comics waiting to go on.
Yeah.
And Ryan Pigg and Eddie Firth would give them comics costumes and say, come back in a week and just be George Washington or whatever. I was like, you know, I never really saw it as a TV show. And then once I got Roast Battle going over at Comedy Central, I was like, I think I'm getting a handle on how to produce these roast shows for a budget.
Yeah.
You know, if they do a certain rating for a certain budget, they can go on forever. And I thought, well, you know, with this historical show, there's a lot of potential there. There's obviously, every time somebody dies, there's a new episode's worth of material. So we got together and I formatted it into a TV show where the audience is more involved, where the audience dresses in character. I wanted it to be a party.
How did you pull that off? Everyone shows up and you hand out costumes?
Or? A lot of people showed up in costume, but our designer, Roger Forker, dressed a lot of the friends and family that would come to the tapings. And I really wanted to channel what I loved as a kid, which was going to Rocky Horror, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, where the audience would get up and get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, so instead of just roasting Abe Lincoln or Martin Luther King Jr., let's throw them a party.
Mm-hmm.
So the room is decorated in a theme that would make them hypothetically feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And I would insert myself as the Roastmaster General through all time and space.
Mm-hmm.
So I play myself on the show. You know, when we roast Freddie Mercury, I'm myself with an afro and braces at 14.
Mm-hmm.
When we roast Abe Lincoln, I'm the Roastmaster General of the Union Army, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I like the idea that it kind of erases the too soon element of roasting, or in a way where it, you know, because you're going so far back that people can't really say too soon about Abe Lincoln.
But they are saying it, which is fascinating. There's no There's no limit to the amount of people who want to get offended over total nonsense.
Yeah, have you gotten a lot of people being offended by this? So it's on Netflix. We should say the 6 episodes. What kind of feedback have you gotten in that direction?
I want to be clear here. We roast Abe Lincoln, Freddie Mercury, Cleopatra, Martin Luther King Jr., Muhammad Ali, and Anne Frank, and the only ones complaining are the Jews.
Coming up, Jeff Ross breaks down the inspired choice to cast Gilbert Gottfried as Hitler on Netflix's historical roast. I mean, that's a special episode. You have Gilbert Gottfried as Hitler roasting Anne Frank, which I guess I could see why people would respond to that. But it's pretty great.
Thanks. You saw it?
Yeah, I saw it.
You know, Gilbert was the first call I made. I wanted Hitler to be silly.
Yeah.
I was channeling something I once heard Mel Brooks say, which is essentially, you can't take back the lives lost, but you can seek some revenge through ridicule. And by making Hitler and the Nazis a joke, I think that's a victory.
Mm-hmm.
The Jews survive. And not only that, we flourish. And as Anne Frank, played eloquently by Rachel Feinstein on the show, she says to Hitler, you know, the greatest revenge, Hitler, is the fact that you're being portrayed by the loudest, most annoying Jew we could find.
Yeah, I like that one.
And I'm really proud of that episode. There's been some backlash.
So what are people upset about, do you think? What do you hear?
Well, it's not what I hear, it's what I read. The people that talk to me are very positive. Mm-hmm. We have 2 grandsons of survivors on our staff.
Mm-hmm.
One works at Netflix, and one is one of the creators of the live show. So we feel very comfortable talking about the Holocaust in the writer's room.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew there'd be some backlash, and it does hurt because you want the people closest to the story of Anne Frank to like it, to love it. You know, I'm a Jewish guy, grew up in New Jersey in a family of kosher caterers. I've certainly had my share of Hebrew school training, and I've seen all the movies, and I've been to the Holocaust museums around the world. And it's not like I'm coming at this in a cavalier way.
Mm-hmm.
We put a lot of time and thought into our very diverse writer's room, learned a lot about Anne Frank as we were writing this episode. And, you know, what hurts is people in, mostly in Amsterdam, where the story of Anne Frank took place, there were complaints from different groups saying that this is not the proper way to learn about the Holocaust through a comedy show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I agree. That's not my goal. Not everybody can go to the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam. Not everybody can go travel to Auschwitz and take the tour.
Yeah.
My show is for the 180 countries that Netflix sends it to in different languages who are too young and distant to be directly affected by the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. My show is for people who confuse Helen Keller and Anne Frank.
Yeah.
My show is for people who would never even know the story. As fake news evolves into fake history, I wanted to keep her name and story alive. So many people won't even know who she is anymore. So I thought it was important to tip my hat, if you will, to Anne Frank.
Yeah, and you give a very poignant speech at the beginning as well, which I was kind of, you know, we don't always hear that side of you.
Her diary helped me understand what she and others went through, and what my uncles Murray and Albie and the Greatest Generation fought for during World War II. When we talk about the Holocaust, we always say never forget, yet genocides continue to take place all over the world. So tonight, our guest of honor stands in not just for the victims of the Nazis, but for the refugees and asylum seekers that continue to be turned away from a better life.
My uncle Murray.
Oh, your uncle, yeah.
Was a medic in World War II for the U.S. Army. And my Uncle Murray was one of my best friends, big influence on me. The family, we all call him Mean Murray because he was a real ball buster.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably the one who gave me thick skin, just torturing me, making fun of me as a kid. And it wasn't until I got older that I realized what a great guy he was. He was, he has a Silver Star, and he got injured in World War II, and he would not talk too often about his experiences, but when I would get him to talk, he told me how he walked through a concentration camp as an army medic, and he helped liberate a concentration camp. And, you know, it was a world battle between good and evil, and they volunteered to be part of this, or they got called up to be part of this. Everybody was affected back then, and I wanted to honor that, too. I wanted my Uncle Murray. He's passed on now. He died at 92. But I wanted to somehow give a salute to the greatest generation who really won that war. You know, FDR is portrayed by John Lovitz on the historical roast, and we had FDR admit that he waited too long to intervene on Anne Frank's behalf. Mm. It becomes somewhat of a play,
yeah.
And it all turns on Hitler. It's really Anne Frank in the seat of honor, because I only roast the ones I love.
Yeah, that's why you couldn't make it a roast of Hitler for that
but
reason.
But it turned
yeah.
into a roast of Hitler, yeah. Much like the way, you know, the Pam Anderson roast turned into a roast of Courtney Love way back when.
So you had Gilbert as Hitler, and he's certainly, I mean, I imagine, did he have any hesitation? Because he seems like someone who just jumps into almost anything without without too much worrying.
I called Gilbert up, and I told him the idea, and I offered him the role. I got to hit, and he said yes. By the time I got to lure, he was already booking an airplane ticket.
That's great.
And then he came to rehearsal and lunch. I couldn't get him to take the armband and the mustache off. He really did some deep acting work.
Yeah, he's doing some method.
Yeah, and he comes out with the high socks. And,
yeah.
You know, and credit to the writing staff on Historical Roast, Hitler's speech wasn't really in character the way you would think an obvious take on Hitler would be. Mm-hmm. What he did was he roasted the world,
yeah.
The genocides that are happening today, the way we treat immigrants today, the way some cultures treat homosexuals. Hitler brings all that on and essentially roasts modern civilization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted these historical roasts to sort of be a comment on what's happening in the world today.
Yeah. I mean, Gilbert is somebody who has who's had some controversies in his past. You know, right. Obviously there's the thing, the jokes after 9/11 that everyone thinks about that turned into The Aristocrats,
right.
And the inspiration for that movie, and you know, other things that he's tweeted. I feel like you delve into a lot of, you know, dangerous comedy territory. But have you ever felt like you were in danger of being canceled or you know, experience that, what that's like?
You mean by saying something so provocative, my career couldn't sustain it? You know, I try to get ahead of these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to predict the backlash and either write into the piece my disclaimer or my intent. So much of this is about intent and context. You know, a roast joke said to a roast audience, which is essentially a temple of free speech, is not going to travel outside that world well. It's like sushi.
Yeah.
You eat it in the sushi restaurant. Maybe it makes the car ride.
Yeah.
But it ain't, you're not eating it tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's not going to be delicious any later than right there.
Yeah.
And roast jokes have to be served up fresh right there. As soon as you try to take them out of context and pull them out and make them mean something else, or, you know, they're not, if a joke wasn't told to you, you have no right to be offended by it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm offended by people that are constantly offended.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's a bullet in the chamber and they're waiting for you to, like, point your gun at them so they could just blast your head off before you even. No, comics are not trying to offend. We're trying to entertain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I imagine that the people who are offended by the Anne Frank episode did not see the Anne Frank episode for the most part.
It seems like it. You know, somebody who used to run the Anti-Defamation League. I mean, most of these people that are complaining are very, very old. And it's also not for them either.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I said, it's for people who wouldn't even know this story. How can we say with the Holocaust, never forget, if people don't know the stories in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you go about writing jokes about the Holocaust? How do you get into it? What's the approach?
The first thing I did was order a dozen copies of the diary of Anne Frank for my writing staff. Mm-hmm. And now you have to understand, on Historical Roasts, it's not like any other show I've ever worked on. I wanted it to be a people's history.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an incredibly diverse writing staff, and people should look these people up. When you watch the show, you can see in the credits all the names, and they really worked hard. We have, obviously, men and women and black and white, and we have Asian people and gay people and a transgender writer and disabled people, and I wanted it to be a real mix. And I wanted us, while we were writing the show, to learn about these things and debate about these things, mm-hmm. and write on a schedule that allowed us to sort of have these discussions. And one of my happiest moments was seeing Alex Duong, who's Vietnamese, a guy who does the roast battles, and take home his Diary of Anne Frank. Here's a guy who didn't even know what that was. He takes it home and he comes back the next day and he knows all about what she went through.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, we're not trying to educate. I'm trying to get people curious about Anne Frank, also about Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and all the other characters in our historical roast this season. I wanted to create curiosity. Last night I saw a tweet on my Twitter feed when I was landing. And it was just a random person saying, thanks to Jeff Ross, I just spent an hour on John Wilkes Booth Wikipedia page. No, like, that's the goal.
Yeah.
Not to educate people about Anne Frank, but to make them curious enough where they go look her up.
Yeah.
And they understand the Holocaust better. And like Rachel Feinstein says as Anne Frank in the show, you know, if you're offended here, then ask Netflix why there's 500 documentaries about Adolf Hitler and none about me. So now there's one show on Netflix about Anne Frank.
Yeah, there you go.
Long live the great Anne Frank.
So I know you're on tour with Dave Attell right now, or you have been doing your Bumping Mics show.
Yeah.
So how's that been going?
We were in Vegas this weekend. It was so much fun. These casino shows. Next week we're at Morongo and Harris SoCal out here in the desert. I've never performed in those places. Dave's
I always drive by them on the way to Palm Springs, but I have not been either.
Normally I want to perform in a theater or a club. Dave loves these casinos. My partner Dave Attell and I, we've been friends our whole careers. We go on stage together, even though we're both solo performers.
Yeah.
We're kind of like rappers where we go on stage together, and when we get a... We improvise together, and when we get a big laugh that cracks each other up, we bump mics. It's called Bumping Mics. And Dave loves these casinos because, A, they pay better, and, B, he can smoke everywhere. You could smoke in the pool. You could smoke in the elevator. You can smoke in the restaurants. Like, Dave loves that.
How did you first meet Dave, and how long have you been friends?
Oof. Dave and I, well, I knew him before we were friends. He emceed all the best open mics when I was an open micer. He was a year or two ahead of me. He always had the best jokes on the open mic circuit. I remember him talking about Elie Wiesel should have a laser light show. He was always fearless, and I always enjoyed his, what was it? He had some great ones. My grandfather sent me a postcard, "Wish you were here, where am I?" And he was just brilliant. And all the comics would come down to watch his sets down at the Comedy Cellar when we were starting out. And I worshipped him. I still do. He really is my favorite comedian. He thinks in punchlines. And when I would fly in from L.A., I'd land at New York. You know, you don't want to go right home to your empty apartment. So I would go by the Comedy Cellar for some hummus and chicken wings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go watch Dave. And Dave, you know... He knows I want to get my yah-yahs out. I didn't have a book spot. He did. So he would just call me on stage, or I'd walk to the men's room, and he'd start heckling me, and I'd start heckling him. Next thing I know, we're on stage together. Sometimes I'd literally be eating while he's performing on stage. Sometimes he would sit at the piano, and I would tell a few new jokes, or we'd switch spots, and it just became this sort of planned chaos of us basically shitting on each other, then shitting on the world through our stand-up, and then going after the audience. And we'd bring up if somebody had a birthday, if somebody was pregnant, we would bring them on stage. And essentially, we'd throw this party on stage. And that evolved into me begging him to go up to Montreal to the comedy festival. And I said, let's call it bumping mics. We kind of bump mics sometimes. He's like, no, it's too on the nose. It's too corny. I go, it's real simple. I think it's good.
Yeah.
And he said, no. And I did it anyway. I told my agent, call the show Bumping Mics. Put it on sale. We're coming to Montreal. And we left there with a with an offer for three episodes. Or I think they wanted four episodes, and we got them down to three because we don't like the commitment. We like to keep it loose.
You look like an umpire during a rain delay.
Jeff looks like he runs the gift shop at a planetarium.
You're in great shape. You probably don't even work out.
I used to work out, but I hurt my back carrying the show. And then...
Yeah, will there be more of those, do you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Nothing official yet, but I really love touring with Dave. We don't do a lot of dates. You know, you say we're on tour.
But, yeah.
You know, we have two next week, and then we're off till, I think, August. We have one, and then a couple in October. We'll add some more down the road. But I love doing it because for the first time, I feel like I'm in the Ramones. I feel like I'm in a band with Dave.
Yeah.
The fan art, the T-shirts, like people, you know, we're like... It's like when Talib Kweli and Mos Def get together. They both have these great careers, but every now and then they get together and do this one special thing.
Yeah. I saw you guys were on Instagram. You were hanging out with Carrot Top.
Yep.
Yeah. And you had, who else was there? You had quite a crew with you this past weekend.
when we do our shows, they really are like... It's like a little comedy festival within a show, and people just start showing up. So Carrot Top came by, Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
You know, we're in Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, and you never know what can happen in our shows. We had this 350-pound male burlesque dancer basically give me a lap dance at the end of the show. And then we had Israel Del Toro, who's a wounded Air Force veteran, was in the audience, and you know he got a little stage time. You never know with our shows, and we don't plan. You know, Dave has a flip phone. We don't really text. We don't go over our act till literally we're walking on stage.
Yeah.
And
is that scary or is
it's
that...
scary for me? He prefers it. Yeah. I like to plan a little bit, and when he does let me sort of plan a little bit, I think the shows are better. But you know, I have to work the way he wants to work because he is a true genius.
Yeah. One testament to his genius is Amy Schumer gave her son Attell as a middle name. Is that true or is that a joke?
That is a true fact.
Were you jealous at all?
I was proud.
Ross
first.
Would be a good middle name too.
I got a little teary-eyed when I saw that Amy did that because I do know how much she loves Dave, and I certainly know how much he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
She appears in our Bumping Mike show briefly on Netflix. And they've been friends a long time. She's sort of a sister to us. She's a really good friend to me. And yet they have this other special thing. They're both from the same part of Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, Dave might not ever have a kid of his own. So the fact that she is keeping his name, his last name, Attell, she named her baby Attell. I cried.
Yeah.
I was really, really moved by that.
Nice.
It takes a lot to make me sort of fountain up like that, but man, that was really sweet.
Yeah.
We're a cult. Comedians are a cult.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Sometimes I think I'm a comedian before I'm an American.
Yeah.
Before I'm a Jew, before I'm anything. I go, yeah, I'm a comedian. When a comedian needs a hug, needs help, no matter where they're from, you can't help but care about the comedians.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
Thanks, Matt.
So I wanted to...
I really like your monotone, whether you're being nice or mean or happy.
Same.
Yeah, you talk like you're in a hostage video. Yeah, so could you please send help, lawyers, guns, and money?
That's good. Well, at least I got a little roasting from you on this episode.
That? Yeah, there you go.
It just happened. You wrote an open letter for the Daily Beast not too long ago to the White House Correspondents Association.
I wanted to thank you for doing that.
You were talking about the Michelle Wolf debacle and everything that went down after that. But that was before that organization decided to give up on comedy altogether this year. So I was curious what you thought about that decision.
Mm. Well, I'm a big fan of that event. I know that event, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, gets a lot of flack for mixing politics and entertainment, and also the administration gets too chummy with the reporters. That's the big dig there, right?
Yeah, right.
But if you really think about it, that could happen anywhere. That happens at cocktail parties. That's happening not in front of the C-SPAN cameras anyway.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. The exciting thing about that event, for me, I've been watching it since I'm a kid, before I even really understood it, was the once-a-year chance for a comic to, and this is cliche, but it's true in this case, to speak truth to power. You had every president for decades sitting there taking a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. There's some cultures you'd get your head taken off. But
yeah,
we got to watch the president getting made fun of, whether it was Jimmy Kimmel roasting Obama or Stephen Colbert roasting George W. Bush or whatever. It goes on and on and on. And suddenly we have a president who's not going to sit there.
Yeah.
And it becomes a non-event. Now you have great comics like Hasan Minhaj and Michelle Wolf back-to-back 2 years in a row talking to the press and not the president.
Yeah.
So the press maybe needed a good talking to, and those were amazing performances in my book. But without the guest of honor, it really is half a show.
Yeah, and it takes away the roast element of it, too. Without the person's not sitting there, you don't get to see their reaction.
Of
you
course.
Yeah.
It's no longer a show, a roast. It's a speech.
Right.
It's a pep talk or whatever you want to call it to the press. Or it's a kick in the butt. However you want to interpret what Michelle did, what Hasan did, without the president there. In the meantime, the president is off having his own rally, having his own party, which I thought was a smart idea on his part.
Right, yeah.
I was glad that they took the comic out.
A lot
of comics were furious. I thought it was a good idea to miss the comedy for a year.
Why?
Because people were taking us for granted as comedians. They were shitting all over Michelle's performance when, in fact, she did exactly what she was supposed to do. She didn't say anything so mean for Sarah Sanders to get upset about her makeup. In the old days, people would be crying, laughing. At a roast, you want to get talked about.
Yeah.
If I ignore you at a roast, that's the insult.
Right, right.
You want to be part of it. You want the attention. And I like that they didn't do it this year. It reminds people why comedy is important. And they had a historian who I thought was amazing. I thought it was important to remind people why the First Amendment, why free speech is important. Let's take a year off, reboot the White House Correspondents' Dinner, have a lecture about why comedy is important. And he made that point, to his credit.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Recently, I was listening to David Letterman talk about when Trump used to be on his show,
yeah,
and that he felt like he could take a joke then. He could laugh. He would laugh at the jokes that Letterman made at his expense, and it was just a different kind of thing, and that really something's changed. I mean, the big thing that's changed is he's the president now. But as someone who, you roasted Trump multiple times,
mm-hmm,
do you feel like that's true? There was a time when he could take a joke and there's now it's different? Or do you feel like it's always kind of been that he can't handle it?
I don't think he ever liked taking a joke. I think he liked the attention.
Right.
And he took the jokes in order to get the attention.
Mm-hmm.
He liked owning Comedy Central for a month.
Right.
You know, the billboards, the promos, the whole everybody's talking about him kind of thing. And I had roasted him 5 years before that for charity at the Friars Club in New York when The Apprentice first came on. So he was always a pretty decent sport.
Yeah.
He would not laugh in front of everybody, but you knew he understood that it was clever, that it was fun. He would always take me aside afterwards and tell me how great it was. He once hired me down to go to Mar-a-Largo and basically roast him in front of the members of Mar-a-Largo. So he had a sense of humor, and he liked the attention. And now there's something else happening.
Yeah.
You know, we can all try to guess what that is.
But, yeah, I mean, he sat absolutely stone-faced that time with, you know, when Seth Meyers was making fun of him at the Correspondents' Dinner, right. which was I think the same year as the roast, was 2011, right?
Yeah, that was shortly after, I think.
Yeah, so it's like he had just been the star of this roast on Comedy Central, but sitting in the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he couldn't bring himself to laugh at himself.
Context is so much of this.
Yeah.
And I think he'll come back to it. I think if he does win a second term, you'll see him sit there and do the White House Correspondents' Dinner. This is me trying to have some good faith that the world will be okay.
Yeah.
I think these roasts are important. They bring people together. And if he doesn't come back to that, it is a good indication that things have gone really, really bad.
Yeah.
That's when we start to slide into what could be a dictatorship.
So you were actually at the White House not too long ago, right? What was that all about, and what was that like?
This is about 2 months ago. I was invited to a celebration of the First Step Act. This is a new law signed with Republicans and Democrats, and it wasn't a political event. It was about people.
Yeah.
And that's why I went. Van Jones's organization, Cut 50, spearheaded, and an organization that I do a lot with called Artists and Athletes Alliance, which sort of sets up educational dinners for celebrities and athletes to learn about politics. And I just love being part of I love listening to smart people.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I learned about a little bit more about this First Step Act, which releases nonviolent drug offenders from prison. Imagine being in jail, man, for something that's now legal.
Yeah.
Imagine you're in Colorado and they legalize weed and you're in jail for 20 fucking years for selling weed. You would go crazy.
Yeah.
You don't care who the president is. You just want to get out.
Right.
So they said that if enough people support this, they would consider it. And Jared Kushner and Ivanka got really behind this with Van Jones and somehow made it happen. Now, you could still go, well, I'm not going to give Trump a win on any circumstances. But then I go back to the fact that these people are in prison. They're desperate. This is people who have no one in their corner. And if they're going to let people out, fuck it, I'm going to go watch this.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a real human moment. This is like a 1860s moment.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, wow, these people were in prison a month ago. Now they're standing on stage with the president. So even though 500 people have been released, they had five or six on stage with the president. And the president, to his credit, did not turn it into a political event. In fact, he was very generous in that he turned to these people and he asked them if they wanted to speak.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very risky move. These people are not necessarily Trump supporters. He doesn't know much about what they're going to say. And there wasn't a dry eye in the House. Each one was very well spoken about their experience. They were very grateful. And like I said, it wasn't politics. It was about people. And I thought, I've performed in jails before. I shot a stand-up special in a maximum security jail in Texas. I'm a big believer in second chances. We incarcerate more people in America than any other country. We're supposed to be a free country. We're not acting that way.
Yeah.
So if this is the little bit that I could do to show my support for something like this, then I'm going to do it.
And did you get to talk or interact with Trump at all while you were there?
I talked to basically everybody in the administration except the president,
yeah.
who was, walked in, made a speech, and walked right out.
Mm-hmm.
But by all accounts, I did get a wink and a thumbs up since I was right there in the front. And I ran into him right after he was elected, before he was inaugurated.
Yeah.
And he has a good memory. He remembers the jokes. He remembers the roasts. You know, he always tells me I'm his favorite. He's good at buttering me up. I think he's trying to keep me on his good side. It's not really working.
But, yeah.
But he's the president. You know, he's going to have to take the jokes, and he knows that.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely ripped into his immigration policy on my border roast that I did for Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm.
And I take the shots where I think he deserves them. But in the rare instance that he can get Democrats and Republicans to come together, even if it's just to serve his ego,
mm-hmm.
friends will show up at the White House. And I think that's why I went.
Yeah, it's like positive reinforcement, encouraging
exactly.
good behavior.
If this is the one tiny little... Yeah, I agree with almost none of his policies, but I can't lie and tell you that I don't get a certain delight in seeing him burn down the system.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the punk rocker in me or the comic in me,
mm-hmm.
but the system's broken.
Yeah.
The fact that he's president.
It's proof.
It's proof.
Yeah.
The fact that we have so many people in prison, the fact that we have so many homeless,
mm-hmm.
the fact that black people are still being killed by crooked cops, the fact that we all hate each other, the fact that our elections are hacked, the system's broken. And I think he's illustrating that.
Yeah.
He himself is an illustration of that.
Right, right. Coming up, Jeff looks back at some of his craziest moments as Roastmaster General, including that time he roasted Donald Trump. So before we kind of start to wrap up here, what I want to do is go through some of the roasts that you've done in the past and see if there's a memory or a story that you can that kind of jumps out.
But I think your memory's better than mine,
yeah,
but I'll
we'll
do
see.
My best.
We'll see. I guess first, just looking back, so I looked back at all the roasts, the Comedy Central ones. This will be the Alec Baldwin one will be the 14th, I believe, in 14 years. Not one. There wasn't one every year. Sometimes there was two in a year.
Right. We wait till we get a big fish.
Yeah.
It's like fishing.
Yeah.
When you get a big enough one, you call it a day. Alec Baldwin wants to get roasted. Yeah. They even call him the Bloviator, right?
You called him a Bloviator?
Didn't they call him that in the New York Post?
Probably.
Sounds like a fish.
Yeah. So I guess to start then, how do you decide someone's a big enough fish? What makes a good roastee?
Oh, that's a good question. You have to go through some criteria. Are they a volunteer, or are they doing this for the wrong reasons?
Mm-hmm.
If someone's doing it for money and exposure, it's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it has a charity element. I believe this one will. And they have to be honored by it. They mm-hmm. have to be flattered by it. Oh, they want to roast me. My friends all want to talk about me. That's a big honor.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have thick skin, obviously. You have to be able to take a joke. You don't want somebody up there with a bad attitude.
Yeah.
You really, to make it a great show, everybody's got to be in on it.
So who have there been ones that where the person getting roasted just didn't have the right attitude and it affected it?
The only time that happened to me was at a private roast.
Mm-hmm.
I roasted Richard Branson
oh.
at a private party. His friends hired me and didn't tell him.
Oh, God.
So you can never surprise somebody at
yeah.
a roast.
Yeah, that's tough.
And he did not like it at all. He pretended to like it for a couple of minutes. Then you could just see he wasn't enjoying it. And then he got up and hugged me and poured water on my head.
Oh God!
He was an asshole.
So you've been doing this for so long that you also get roasted at these events. Has the way that people roast you changed? Do you think in the past couple decades?
They used to tease me for only doing the roast. Oh, this is your once a year.
Yeah.
Show Jeff, and mm-hmm. you know, wouldn't be a roast without Jeff Ross, you know, these kind of jokes. And you know, I guess I heard a little bit, but as roasting has become a worldwide movement between the roast battles on every continent
mm-hmm.
and now with the historical roasts in 180 countries, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm the roast guy. I kind of love it.
Yeah.
So so they have to resort to calling me, you know, fat. Which I'm, you know, whatever. If I ever lost weight, I'd probably, they'd just call me ugly. Now I get to be fat and ugly. I'm okay with it. You know, the jokes bounce off me. They hurt. I do have feelings.
Yeah.
My family tried to roast me for my birthday one year, and I wouldn't let them. It's like, you guys know way too much about
me. Too close to home.
I'm too sensitive. And maybe I'm a hypocrite, but, you know, these roasts, they're vicious.
Mm-hmm. So going back to the, you mentioned the Pamela Anderson roast became right. about Courtney Love. Is that sort of what stands out in your memory from that one?
No, well, sure, that's a big part of it. But that roast had many, many layers. This is 2005, mm-hmm. Pam Anderson's on top of the world, big, big star. We hadn't done a roast in a few years, I believe. This is like a reboot with our mm-hmm. director, yeah. Joel Gallen, who knew Pam and said, let's make it a little bit more of a rock and roll roast.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought Jimmy Kimmel in to MC, and we had Sarah Silverman and Andy Dick and Adam Carolla and Greg Giraldo, roast in peace. And it was amazing. Like, every joke, every comic was just on fire. And it became a wild night.
Mm-hmm.
Where at one point Courtney Love kind of dipped into the bathroom with Andy Dick, and they came out and they were both sort of all amped up and jumping around, and here's Courtney Love literally rubbing on everybody, and she pulling up her shirt and spreading her legs for the cameras, and Jimmy's trying to hold her down so everybody can get through their speech uninterrupted, and it was all a big benefit for PETA.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, doesn't one of these PETA people have a stun gun to put this animal down? Yeah, I said, Courtney Love, you're like the girl next door if you happen to live next door to a methadone clinic.
Yeah, it seems like you always have at least one kind of wild card person in there, you know, besides the sort of comics that you like to have up there a lot. That there's always someone who's real unpredictable.
Finally, I couldn't get her to stop throwing ice at me and carrying on, and I needed to like finish my. I worked weeks on my speech. You know? So finally I said, how is it possible that Courtney Love looks worse than Kurt Cobain? And you heard a, and Courtney looked at Pam and Pam looked at Courtney and they both burst out laughing. And then minutes later, Courtney had her head on my lap. You know, and the next day she went to rehab. So roasting saves lives.
Oh, yeah. There you go. So a few years later, you roasted Joan Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Roast in peace as well. What do you remember from that night?
Well, when you roast a fellow comedian, it's always the best show
mm-hmm.
because they get it. And then I remember Kathy Griffin and Greg Giraldo and all these amazing comedians roasting this legend, Joan Rivers, who always had new material, who's stayed relevant. You know, it really makes me sad to think that she was gone too soon like that. She had a lot more to give. But what impressed me about that roast, to answer your question, is at the end when she went on,
mm-hmm.
she had the best set at her own roast. And I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah.
She schooled everybody. And it created a bond between her and I. I think I called her Mamala or something, some Yiddish word. And we stayed in touch. I was in her documentary. And eventually Howard Stern's 60th birthday came up. And the producer, Gary Delabate, said, would you be interested in roasting Howard for his birthday? You'd be the only roaster. But we would team you up maybe with Joan Rivers. I go, wow.
Yeah.
I've never done a dueling podium scenario. And just the fact that I got to stand side by side, we met in the morning and we went over our material. And I would read a joke and she'd read a joke. And then she'd read two and I'd read two. And we'd go back and forth until Howard was fried, right? We would just crush him until he yelled for mercy. It was going to be a big, big extravaganza full of huge celebrities, a big show. But we were going to go on early and break it open. And at one point, her and I had a similar joke.
Yeah.
I was like, oh boy, they're both really good jokes. And she looked at me and she looked back, and it took her about 10 seconds and she said, you know what? Yours is better. Do yours. I was like, wow, there's a star.
Yeah.
She knows mine's better and she wants us both to look good.
Yeah. And all that mattered to her was which one's better, not herself.
Right.
Yeah.
Love that woman.
Donald and I have a lot in common. We both live in New York. We both play golf. We both fantasize about his daughter.
We talked about the Trump roast a little bit, the one on Comedy Central, but is there anything else that you remember from that night? I know there was a lot of, I think we talked about this once before, but there's a lot of stories about him not, you know, trying to cross out things on people's jokes and not really understanding what the jokes, what joke structure was and crossing out punchlines and stuff like that. Do you remember anything
Everybody says he was sensitive about his finances.
Yeah.
Pretty much everyone in the world is sensitive about their finances. So I never really understood that as a dig.
Yeah.
You know, I think I had a joke about his finances. I read his book, The Art of the Deal. Donald, how come every chapter was chapter 11? You know, what was fun about it was in New York. And
yeah.
At that time, you have to remember, he's king of New York. He pulled off miracles. People love to underestimate him and say, oh, he's just shooting from the hip and tweeting whatever, and he's making spelling mistakes. That's a joke and a game to him. This guy was building skyscrapers in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
They would take 10 years. He's methodical. So it was exciting to have a New Yorker get roasted on Comedy Central. We'd always been doing them in Hollywood.
Right.
And as somebody who came up in New York, it was kind of fun to roast somebody who was part of where I was from, somebody I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, you normalized him. You made jokes about him running for president way back then. He'd been saying that since the 80s, that he was going to run for president. We didn't normalize him to run for president any more than SNL, the late night shows, Howard Stern. Donald Trump was a huge celebrity. If we normalized him, then we're normalizing Kim and Kanye, the cast of Game of Thrones,
mm-hmm.
Justin Bieber. We're doing the same thing to them. This guy just happened to figure out some other thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I look back at it with mixed memories because it was an exciting time, but also a cautionary tale.
Yeah. Well, of all the people you roasted, no one else so far has gone on to become president. So
maybe Alec Baldwin. Maybe that's his plan.
Oh, yeah.
This summer on Comedy Central. You never know. I think people always have a hidden agenda with these roasts that we never find out about till later. Like Justin Bieber was an incoming call. He wanted to be roasted.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's gold.
Because
they're really up for it. And it's because he knew he had done some things that weren't great. He'd, you know, racing his cars and creating havoc and being a punk teenager. He's like, you know what? I'm a man now. I want to reboot my career. I got some good songs coming out next year. Let me try to own my mistakes. And I think roasts are good that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're a good way to sort of tell your friends and your fans and your family, like, I'm kind of done with that part of my life and I'm going to move forward.
Yeah.
It's a reboot.
I wonder if that's going through Alec Baldwin's head as well, because he's had some run-ins with the law well.
Right.
I mean, he must be thinking that about how that's gonna come up.
I think he wants to put it out there.
Yeah. Face it.
Yeah, I mean, we just announced it, so I haven't talked to him about it yet. But I'm probably running into him. I'll probably run into him soon, since we live in the same hood.
Just a couple years ago, a few years ago, was Rob Lowe, which had the Ann Coulter was up there with you. And
was
that
there?
Was
I barely remember her being there.
Ann, what happened? You wrote 11 books, but you couldn't write a single fucking joke. You have a face that would make doves cry. this is hard for a roast. How do I roast somebody from hell? Bitch. Oh, and that voice, Donald Trump, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard inside an inner city school you want to defund. Don't stare at me with that roasting bitch face. And against gay marriage. What's your thinking on that? If I can't get a husband, they shouldn't either?
I had not fully taken her seriously as a pundit. Mm-hmm. I knew her socially from sitting at the comics table at the Comedy Cellar.
She would go to the Comedy Cellar?
To me, she seemed like a comedian. She was friends with comedians.
Oh,
she
really?
Was saying outrageous things. You know, we try to get a laugh. She was trying to get a jaw drop, you know?
Yeah.
She was I never took her seriously and always figured she was exaggerating her opinions, didn't think much of it. And I must admit, I was pushing for a political person to be at the roast.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be, it would add some oomph to the whole evening.
Yeah.
It helps put it all in a relevant place. When you have somebody who's in the news talking about politics, and that way I can layer in some topical material into a roast about Rob Lowe, who a lot of the jokes would be about the 80s and 90s,
mm-hmm.
and when he was coming up and when his scandals took place. Because now he's a man and he's having a great career, but he's not the wild man anymore.
Right.
So I was like, all right, well, let's find some wildness to this roast. So I said, yeah, let's get somebody political. And then Ann Coulter had a book coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And look, whatever her roast was going to be was one thing, but I like having big targets there.
Mm-hmm.
How many Rob Lowe jokes can I make?
Right.
I want to make some Ann Coulter jokes in my forum where I can really let loose. And we wrote her an amazing, the writers, not me, the writing staff on the Comedy Central roast wrote her an amazing self-aware speech,
mm-hmm.
that if she had delivered, she would have made a lot of new fans. But she didn't like it, and she brought in a couple of her friends from Fox News to help her write her speech, which she started by taking out her new book and putting on the podium. Now, if there's ever a way to get the fans to hate you at a roast, it's to start talking about yourself.
Yeah.
And your book.
It made it very clear why she was there.
Right. And she was getting destroyed all night. She had a real opportunity to use that. She built up goodwill.
Yeah.
You know, by taking all the jokes all night. You could see she didn't like it in her face, but she didn't really snap back.
Mm-hmm.
She took it.
Yeah.
So now she goes up towards the end, and people are kind of rooting for her to see what she says, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They want to be entertained. It doesn't mean you have to agree with her policies to go, oh, that was a good line.
Mm-hmm. I think people like when they're surprised that someone is funny who they didn't think would
course.
Be funny.
Of course. We saw Martha Stewart do that years ago.
Yeah.
On the Justin Bieber roast, and then later on at other shows. And I knew she would do well because I'd seen her at the Friars roast over the years. But with Anne, for some reason, she just wasn't willing to play along. She pretended she didn't know what the roasts were afterwards. And then as the buildup of the press of what happened and the show's about to launch, she would say that it was edited to make her look worse. She said that before the show even aired.
Yeah.
So what we did was we queued up her her unedited raw appearance,
mm-hmm.
and basically let her know that if she kept saying we were messing with her, we were going to release it. We made her look better than it was.
Yeah. Do you remember?
And we do that for everyone, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
We want our guests to come off great.
Mm-hmm.
We're an entertainment show.
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely had some people, some non-comedians bomb on these roasts, though. I mean, I'm thinking about the situation. Dennis Rodman had kind of a rough set past year.
Right.
I was in the room for that one, and it was I don't know exactly what made it on TV compared to what I saw, but that was a little tough.
There's nothing more fun than when a roast goes off the rails.
I
love it.
Yeah. Do you remember any jokes that the writers wrote for Ann Coulter that she refused to say?
I can't remember. I remember that it was more of a conceptual piece,
mm-hmm.
that would make her look very self-aware and self-effacing, and she blew it.
Yep.
She blew it. You know, I saw her at a party recently. She pretended she didn't see me. I still like her because she came to the roast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with anything she says on social media or in the media in general, but I also understand that we're all human beings, and she was willing to put herself out there and the, and show up on my show. I have to show some grace, and she didn't take it well.
Yeah, and she snubbed you at the party recently.
You can't win them all.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Alec Baldwin one. I think that'll be a, I think that'll be a lot of fun. There's so much material there.
I think it's going to be great. What should I make fun of?
I don't know. I mean, someone's, I don't know who's going to be the one to bring up the voicemail, but that's obviously something right. that people remember, the voicemail to his daughter.
His anger issues.
Yeah, he has some anger issues, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he can take the jokes. He blocked me on Twitter a while ago, I think, for criticizing his Trump impression.
Really?
So we'll see.
He
I don't
blocked
know.
Blocked you.
Yeah,
I'm that is not blocked. A good sign for somebody about to get roasted.
I know
that he couldn't take the criticism. Maybe he's come around on that.
Yeah, we'll see. So the final thing, the way we end the show is I ask everyone what the last thing that made you laugh really hard is. It could be another comic that you saw live, something on TV, a movie. Just kind of think of it as a recommendation for listeners, something that could make them laugh.
Something that really made me laugh. Okay. Dave Attell, last weekend on our Bumping Mike show, without telling me, took his baseball hat off. And he had a do-rag under his thing.
Yeah.
And he put on those sunglasses that the snipers wear. And he said that he was in Vegas for the World Poker Tour. He looked like one of those poker guys. To me, it's never the jokes. It's the moments.
Yeah.
It's like when you least expect something from someone and they go the other way. Life is full of surprises and twists and turns, and you have to be open to them.
Mm-hmm.
As far as jokes go, he'd kill me for repeating his jokes. They're all, you know, deep down in his pocket, and he only shows them to people when he's ready to.
But
it would probably be anything that Dave Attell says when we're on live on stage together.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for roasting me a little bit, and
thanks for almost using thanks for using the most monotone voice in the history of broadcasting. So, Jeff, when you were being raped by those Cossacks in... let me hear you explain something happy. Like, tell me, like, what's some great movie you just saw? Do you ever get animated?
No.
Do you ever type in all caps? What would that sound
like? I like using exclamation points in emails because then people, you know, it seems like I'm excited about what I'm telling them.
What about a fire at a theater? What would it sound like?
Let's get out of here.
What do you sound like when you're making, when you have an orgasm?
Oh, that's too far. That's too personal. Can't go there.
Oh my God, I'm having an orgasm. I bet your wife calls it the last laugh.
All right, I think that's where we got to end.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thank you so much to Jeff Ross for being my guest on today's show. You can check out Historical Roasts on Netflix now and the Comedy Central Roast of Alec Baldwin when it airs later this year. Jeff and Dave Attell are currently on their Bumping Mics tour, and you can find those dates at roastmastergeneral.com. If you enjoy this show, please, please tell your friends and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. The Last Laugh is distributed by Himalaya Media for The Daily Beast. It is produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch for Starburns Audio, and edited by Mackenzie Mazzell. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find the show every week on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week!